And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
How great is that?
Yeah.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, Aaron. How are we doing?
It's going to be one of those days.
Yes.
So it is October 27th, 2024. We are recording this particular program, and I'm sure we will replay it later. So, and it says October 26th on the website. I've already made a mistake. It's going to be one of those.
You've been doing that a lot lately.
It's going to be one of those kind of days. I'm tired. Hey, so the election is November 5th, just in case you missed that somehow and you've been living in a cave.
Yeah, vote and get it over with, please.
Yes, do. Please. Turn your ballot in. So if you don't want to put it in the mail, I would say at this point, probably, you know, if you have to mail it, do it. But you could take it to the clerk's office. You could take it to your local Republican headquarters. You can have your neighbor deliver it. You sign, you know, have them sign the back. They could take it in for you. If you live in California, ballot harvesting just means someone else can deliver your ballot to the registrar or voters. They have to sign the back of the envelope. I mean, you sign in the real place as the voter, but there is a spot for them. They sign it, turn it in.
Right. They can't fill it out for you.
No. Don't give them your blank ballot, but fill it out, get it all done, have somebody deliver it. But get that stuff turned in so the signatures can all be verified and they're all ready to be counted. I know that here in Shasta County, if there's an issue with the signature, they contact the voter and they get that fixed, because I've had several people tell me that.
Yeah, you've had people call.
Over the years, we've had lots of people call. Different issues with signatures, so that's good. They're actually checking. And if you need voter information, if you're in the state of California, look up the California GOP. They have information for you on there. Shasta County, we have ShastaGOP.com. That has voter guide, voter information, candidate information, and endorsements from the committee.
And it is National Civics Day, which
My gosh, so this is even better.
Yep. Importance of civic elections, I believe, is what it says.
And so for all the people who plan on waiting until the last minute and then say it doesn't matter because the presidential election was called, I want you to really think about it. We have a bunch of propositions on the ballot. Prop 36, regardless of where you are on all the other ones, 36 has got to be a yes. We need to bring crime back to crime again.
Yeah.
It'd be highly unlikely that one doesn't pass, but we need your vote on that. You have school boards, you have city councils, board of supervisors. Some districts don't have that, but some do. So you have all those other folks. You know, Congress is, the House is up every 2 years. Every member of Congress is up for election every 2 years. There are your term limits. So make your vote count. And go cast it.
Yeah, you got school boards, you got judges, you got all kinds of people.
Yeah,
we didn't
have any judges on ours this time. I don't know about other places in the country, but there's always a lot of stuff. So
there's a big reason to vote.
There are lots of places to get information on local things, propositions, and candidates and whatnot. So make the calls, ask your neighbors, ask people who think like you to, you know, take a look at what they're doing and where they're getting their information and what they're recommending. We've been running lots of ads in Shasta County on Facebook, Instagram, all over the place. So hopefully you have seen those, because the committee spent quite a bit of time raising money and doing that for the candidates. So without further ado, our guest is Dr. Shizong Chen. He has not been on our show since July 30th of 2023. Can you believe that?
It's been that long.
I know. I thought I made a mistake. Another mistake, just to be clear. I looked back and I thought, what the heck has been going on? So anyway, we have been remiss. He's been busy. He's a busy guy. But I listed the other shows that he has done with us because we always learn a lot. He's been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years. He has founded, co-founded, or been spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and has spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism in 1989 when he helped organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. He was outraged by the June 4th massacre. He founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation and has served on the board of the Press Freedom Guardian and was elected as the president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. And upon learning of the brutal persecution of the Falun Gong in China, Dr. Chen founded the Falun Gong Human Rights Working Group in 2001 and has since submitted over 100,000 cases of human rights abuses against the Falun Gong practitioners to UN special reporters. He has also founded and is president of the Conscience Foundation, a nonprofit organization to publicize and remind people that the human conscience is the very essence of humanity. In real life, let's see, I'm skipping to the bottom here because in real life, he was born in 1962. He is an entire year older or younger than I am. I am 1 year older, so I will be the boss today. Oh, no, Bill's older than all of us.
Shape up.
Bill's the boss of us. At 15, he entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology. Neither Bill nor I did that. He came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and receive his Ph.D. in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego.
I did do that.
And no, he didn't do that either.
Oh.
He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego without Bill and I. Wow. I don't know what's wrong with me today. I feel a little silly. Dr. Chen, you're a serious guy, but you're kind of silly every now and then, but not a lot. not a lot. We'll stop screwing around now.
Well, thank you for having me back, and thank you for continuing the program.
Yep, you have a serious topic as always that gets zilch for airtime. I mean, people, the information on China, as you look at our news and whatnot, do you just shake your head at how little we actually report about China?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
However, they're of the most importance. We just came off the COVID threat from China. Not long, right?
No, it seems to never go away either.
Mm-hmm.
People are still wearing masks.
Yeah, and now we have another threat at the door already. And many people spoke about it. And according to the Undersecretary of Treasury Department, and this is one of the most important topic that the United States face now, and multiple secretaries from the U.S. government. Secretary of State, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Commerce have gone to China to talk about this topic. That is the overcapacity of China. What does that mean? China's overcapacity. Well, it's China's capacity to to swamp the whole world with its product. It exports so much that it worries the whole world, and this is becoming the greatest issue, according to Undersecretary for International Affairs, from of the Treasury Department. Okay. So, how overwhelming is China's overcapacity? Most of us are not economists, so I will minimize the more complicated number, but I'll just give you some easier number to understand.
Thanks.
Every day, there are 4 million mail packages arrive to the United States from China. 4 million. Okay? And the current U.S. law will treat those you know, packages. Those packages contain product from China, okay? And as long as their value is below 800, then they're tax-free.
Okay.
So every day, okay,
yeah,
multiply 4 million by 800, and then times that with 365.
No kidding. Well, that explains a lot.
That is a number that, you know, unaccounted for. This is because this is tax-free, okay? So they will not even account for the in the trade, you know, data, trade surplus, right? Okay. In year 2023, China exported 4.91 million motor vehicles to Europe and to the United States. Mainly Europe, okay? And a lot of those are electric automobiles. So China is now the world's largest electric vehicle exporter. And that is a 58% increase from year 2022.
Wow.
Yeah. And this year, in the first 5 months alone, 2.45 million electric vehicles exported. And that, again, is 26% increase over the same period in 2023.
It's kind of hard to wrap your mind around.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you think about how heavy they are and all of those things. I mean, the cost of that you'd think would be, you know, prohibitive. Shipping them all here, you'd think it'd be cheaper to make them here, but...
Yeah. And then shipbuilding. China's shipbuilding order for the natural gas... shipping ships are now filled to 2027. And in terms of lithium battery, China's capacity of lithium battery production exceeds the world's need to 2050, I think.
Wow.
And, China's planned production capacity of electric vehicles in 2030, 5 years from now, will be over 70 million. Right. And the global electrical vehicle sales are estimated to only 44 million, projected to 44 million in year 2023. By the way, these numbers are all from what I just mentioned, the report from the Undersecretary of International Affairs, from the Department of the Treasury.
Wow.
And so these numbers are just like you said, it doesn't even make sense.
Yeah, why would we do that?
And why China would do that, right? And while another side of the, another unknown story, this story is not even covered by, you know, this Undersecretary Jay Shambaugh, was how competitive, internal competitive, how severe the internal competition inside China. Right? Not only China is overwhelming the global competition, because when China exports us, they export at a price that nobody can match.
Yeah.
And so they must be doing well inside China, right? No, not at all. Worse.
See, and that wouldn't make sense to people. They'd be thinking, you know, China is the one who's making out in this whole thing, and we're just funneling all this money into their society, so they're just getting wealthier and wealthier. And I know there's more to that story. Hold on for 5 seconds, and that's what I tell the dogs. That really means 2 minutes. I tell the dogs all the time, I'll be back in 5 seconds, and yeah, they fall for it all the time. Anyway, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Oh, thanks.
I think Pat Benatar is onto the gist of the program here. Okay, so China is sending all this stuff here. We're thinking that the country is getting wealthy, but you're saying that it's actually kind of not exactly the case.
They're quite the opposite.
Hmm.
It doesn't make sense, right?
Yeah, kind of.
So, So. The whole world is trying to make sense of that. And they're, as I said, you know, this is not an economic class, and we will not, you know, go into all the theories. There are many theories, you know, from, our secretaries, our economists, our Wall Street, conglomerates, you know, they have explained this way and that way, and trying to change it this way and that way. Hopefully, at the end of the program, hopefully we can make some simple sense out of it. But anyway, so the world has called this China export as China shock number two, as China shock one has ever stopped, right? But there's a difference. There's a difference. There's no gap. I don't think there's a gap. The so-called China shock number one was when China was first admitted to WTO back in, you know, thanks to Bill Clinton. China was admitted to WTO in year 2000. There was a movie made by movie made about that called Death by China. Peter Navarro and wrote that book and made that movie, right? And so that movie talked about the damages of China's admission into WTO and how that, led to the cheap China product run over of the whole world. But those cheap products are about, clothes, shoes, socks, toothpaste, all those low-end products. So the low-end China export is called China Sha at that time. And now we're calling this high-end. Now, this cars, ships, solar panels, lithium batteries, these are high-end, right? More high-end industrial products. So they call it China's shock too. So I don't think China hasn't stopped exporting the low-end product, but that becomes the low-end product becomes, in terms of value, becomes minuscule compared to high-end product. But then there's a question then, who helped China to get those high-end capacity? So I'm going to leave that question now. We'll visit that later.
Okay.
But what I want to impress our audience is that this is the first time, I think, in the entire history of the United States that this mighty United States has ever been this threat. I just mentioned that, China shock number one, and then in between there's the COVID-19 now. This is another China shock, this overcapacity that worries our government. I don't remember in the history, ever since the British invasion of Washington, D.C., I don't remember after that we have ever been threatened. Even in World War I, World War II, it was not fought on this land. This land was never threatened. There was a civil war in between. And United States has always came out victorious in those previous international conflict, World War I, World War II, but the most resounding victory of the United States is Cold War. Because that is over the Soviet Union and the whole block of, dozen countries. And yet, we are right now not only threatened. I don't know how many Americans see that we are actually invaded. In a real sense, we're invaded by a virus, the Chinese Communist Party virus. And now we are invaded by 400 million package per day. We're invaded by an economic force. That force has changed our way of life. Probably not as dramatic as a war, but I would say more profound than a war. Maybe I'll have time to cover how that was, how our way of life has been changed by China's invasion, non-military invasion.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's been a very, very slow creep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not even perceptible. Even with the overcapacity, China's so-called overcapacity, I don't think our government has figured out the moral reason behind it. Okay? So, now, in addition to the overcapacity, there's another invisible threat. This is still far, but that's at an international stage as well. The conflict over Ukraine. Russia, now North Korea.
Yeah. Domino.
Are in that war. Who is behind that? Who is the economic force behind that? And then there's another conflict in Middle East. Hamas. Yeah. You know, all this tragedy in Middle East. And Israel now sees that behind all that is Iran. But who is behind Iran? Okay. So there is a, I don't know whether you caught this news. So a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, Israel military invaded Lebanon, right? To wipe out Hezbollah force there. And then at a tunnel, the Hezbollah and Hamas, they hide underground, right? But at one exit of those tunnels, underground tunnels, where the UN forces, UN peace maintenance or peacekeeping forces, that is the exit of the underground tunnel for the Hezbollah is less than 50 meters from the UN, peacekeeping forces.
Yeah, that seems a little weird.
Yeah, and then those peace forces there are mainly made by Chinese engineering soldiers. So there, in China military, there's this kind of military, this kind of forces called engineering. They are more like our contractors. In the United States, I don't think we have that kind of military force. So if we want to build anything, or contractor would do them. But in China, military would do a lot of them. So there's military engineers. And so the Chinese engineering military trying to intervene the Israel military forces. And so that led to a conflict that killed several dozen of this Chinese engineering soldiers. And China has been silent since. Because there's a political, it's a legal question. Why are you there? Why are you there in the name of United Nations? Right. Well, it turns out all those underground networks, by Hamas and Hezbollah, they were made, or at least the Chinese engineering military are helping them to construct those underground tunnels to fight or to threat Israel.
And that's absolutely not being discussed anywhere.
Somewhere, yeah. Very little in the main. Well, there's no discussion in the mainstream media.
Yes, no, none. I should say it's a big world out there. Somebody's probably discussing it. To say nowhere is probably that's inaccurate. But what people are seeing on a daily basis, no, China's not being linked to any of that. They're just sitting back and watching.
Correct. Communist China threat to the whole world, in particular to the leader of the free world, is so pervasive, so fundamental, that it doesn't even get discussed because it's probably been accepted as life itself. I don't know whether that's the right way to put it, but as you said, it's not reported.
No, not at all.
Well, as far as the North Korean troops in Ukraine, that has to be sanctioned by China, because China historically has propped up North Korea. So I don't think North Korea is doing that on their own. I think they're getting the green light from China, correct?
That's correct. But, Bill, you are absolutely right, but unfortunately, there are not many bills in the United States.
Well, I have to agree with you there.
Yeah.
Right. So, China must be, the Communist China must be behind that, but we are not talking about them.
Yeah.
So, this country is, the problem is that we're threatened by that. And our politician, our, you know, political scientists, our media, even when they discussed it, they only discuss at the technical level. They do not discuss at the policy level.
Well, I think they kind of, well, they kind of soft sell it.
That's right.
I mean, there are people in this country that are unclear about whether or not China is communist or not. That's not really a debatable item, is it?
I agree with you.
I mean, it's 100% communist, run by communists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it would be politically incorrect to discuss as communist issue, right? That's what we're talking about.
Oh, yeah, you don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
that's
right. So we're only talking about it at the technical level, you know. Economically, why is this? Why is that? Well, why is this? Why is that? Because it's communist.
Yeah. And well, so, besides, we do have people here, the Biden family, snuggling up to China, which would mean they were snuggling up with communists, so we'd better downplay that part, because otherwise that's bad. It's kind of interesting how all that kind of, is intertwined in a really unproductive kind of way. Let's take a really quick break before we continue down the trail so we don't cut you off again. Our guest is Dr. Shezong Chen. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Did you hear him talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu.
Back at it. All right, so the Chinese government, there's no debate open. This is a communist government. And you know, just for people who don't really understand that, since that is sort of part of our you know, discussion with this election coming up. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, socialism and communism and all that sort of thing. You've dealt with this firsthand. So, I don't know. Want to give people the elevator speech on communism? Is there such a thing?
I hope, you know, in the past, you know, 40 minutes or so, 30 minutes, I you know, I brought up the phenomena that China's threat of the United States, which is still not well publicized, as we just mentioned. They were presented to us in a different way, different form. So we will not be alert by it, right? You know, but the job loss, the COVID, they are all real, and so our government do have to report it, do have to respond to it in a way, but not in a way that helps people of this country to understand. So I am a Chinese American. That is, I'm a adopted American. And, you know, Aaron and Bill, you two are my best American friends. And so I am going to speak to you and our audience in the truest American spirit. I'll try to tell you as real as possible that how this came about. And so we have discussed, well, first talk about this topic on this station. That was back 2018, I guess.
Yeah, it was a long time. I'm going to look right now. July 2019.
2019, okay. All right, so but long before that, before the 2008 Olympics in Beijing, I have already been talking about this generous barbarism. Mm-hmm. That was the origin of all this communist China problem leading to now. And how that came about. Right? So that led us, you know, at that time we talk about the 1989 Beijing student demonstration, or the 1989 pro-democracy movement in China. And that movement itself, actually, is so significant that it doesn't get proper credit yet. But that movement was really the domino piece that causes downfall of the Berlin Wall, the killing of Ceausescu, the Romanian dictator, and then eventually the whole collapse of the Soviet bloc of communist country, the Warsaw, and that ended the Cold War. But the CCP survived because CCP is Chinese Communist Party, because Nixon came up, or rather Kissinger came up with this strategy of uniting China to isolate the Soviet Union. So there was this strategic partnership or alliance between Communist China back in the late 1970s to fight Soviet Union. And since then, China has been given a special treatment among all Communist countries. And so even when that when the massacre, Dreamforce massacre happened, President Bush, the senior president, Bush, still sent a secret convoy to visit China after the June 4th massacre, and to have some, you know, behind-the-door deal, not to pressure China too hard, communist China too hard. And that massacre also led to some political change inside China. In the uprising of a person called Jiang Zemin, in the normal world, he should have been as infamous as Stalin and Hitler. In the future, he will be. But he came to power in 1989, and he was the originator of this generous barbarism. Right? And the generous barbarism works this way. The military kind of barbarism in Hitler or in Stalin, they threaten us directly. If you do not surrender, we'll run over you. We will kill all of you. Right? So that compels, actually, resistance from the free world. And the free world, certainly at great cost, at great price, fought the war, fought them, and a lot of people died. Right? But the free world came out victoriously. Chinese Communist Party do not have that kind of power. They don't. They didn't have the military muscle like Hitler, like Stalin. They did not have the economy either. So, Jiang Zemin came to the United States in a free world and said, look, we're different. We do not threaten you. Not only we will not threaten you, we will share our prosperity with you if you're willing. Right? We will let you in on our massive market. Right? And you don't have to do anything. You don't have to sacrifice anything. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we just want you to do nothing. The only condition is you look away from what we do. And they are very generous, right? They're only barbaric to its own people.
I was going to say, you, when you say look away from what we do, you mean to the people in their own country, their own people.
Right.
Look away from the human rights abuses. Look away from the forced organ harvesting. Look away from all that.
This is kind of offering that the world has never seen. The free world has never seen. The free world was used to see, you know, gun barrels. They used to know the nuclear war. They used to, you know, see the Berlin Wall. But this kind of offering, this kind of temptation is something that was never seen before. So, no free world government, particularly their leader, United States, did not know how to deal with it. So one by one, they all fall in. But they fall in also because our great Wall Street, our multinationals, our globalists, right? At that time it was a global economy, that was, you know, at its height. And China was the greatest attraction to that. So with Wall Street, with our multinationals, this China policy was born, that we will have China to prosper. In the process, China will make money, and then when it makes money, the middle class will rise up. They'll make China a democracy. In a former Congress, Congressman Rohrabacher's language, he said, "How a Nazi make a liberal?" That was he calls that the U.S. policy on China. Unfortunately,
it's kind of amazing when you look at it, because honestly, you all the years we have spoken with you, all the different programs, and I guess I should really not miss the opportunity to encourage people to please go and look. We have been doing shows on China since November of 2018. With a bunch of different people, right straight long before COVID, we were talking about China, which was odd since no one, I remember the first shows we did, we would say if somebody in the program would talk about the CCP, no one knew what that meant. We had to continue to define that's the Chinese Communist Party. That's come back kind of into the American lexicon, but at that time, it was very much under the radar. And when we were, let's see, some of the early ones, we spoke about the forced organ harvesting in the beginning of, looks like 2020, really. And people hadn't heard about that at all. They had no idea that was going on. People just getting snatched off the street. You're a political prisoner. You look healthy, too. How's your liver? We have somebody with some money who wants to travel here and get a new one. And guess what? We picked yours. And I don't mean to be cavalier about it, because that's actually what happens. So if this is a new idea for you, please go to the archives. They are free to listen to. They're commercial free. They're just an MP3 file. Just click on it and listen. And I think you'll be blown away. So when people say, furthering this the generous barbarism, right? They are, quote, generous with us. Here are all these goods and services, or goods that are cheap. I shouldn't say services, but services stay at home and they're bad. So the goods come here cheap as long as we don't hold them to account for any of the human rights abuses that happen to their own people. It's really something to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was when China was, when the CCP was weak. The only thing it has is the 1.5 billion people that it holds hostage. That was its only attraction. But the CCP was able to hold us to that generous barbarism, because the CCP found the most powerful, I realized later, more now, that the CCP found the most powerful weapon against the United States, against Americans, and that is our own greed. Behind the overcapacity in China now is the over-greed. And so that is our own desire to make more and more money, never enough money. There's no, the money, so many containers can be filled up, but our desire for money can never be filled up. It was that greed that allowed the CCP to getting into our lives more and more, to control our, to impact our lives more and more,
Well, and to turn a blind eye to the Confucius Institutes here in this country, the influence, that's how we met you. You wrote an article, mm-hmm. Can China-fornia ever become California again? That's how I met you. I was like, what the heck? We need to hear from this guy. He's our hostage here, the second hour, but we do have to take a really quick break for the news, and we will come back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us commercial free and free to listen to at WeThePeopleRadio.us. We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Well, Bill, looks like here we are, a week from the big election.
Big election day.
Big election, so please get your ballots turned in.
Yep.
If you don't want to mail them, take them to your local GOP headquarters, take them to the Registrar of Voters, and that gives, if you're taking in your mail-in ballot and there's a problem with it, like they check the signature and there's an issue, they will contact you, get that squared away so that on the 5th, when the ballots all start to be run through, yours will be counted at that time, or go to the polls. But if you don't think you're going to make it, get your ballot in now. We need everybody. And just in case you think your vote doesn't matter, I do know someone who won in the primary by 3 votes. 3 votes.
Somebody's vote mattered.
So 3 people who might have thought their vote didn't matter did matter. So it does count, and it also sends a huge message.
Mm-hmm.
I know in California, Prop 36, the one that is going to make the, for those of you that are angry, like, well, I don't know, all of us, that you can steal $950 worth of stuff and then, you know, run out of the store and nothing happens to you.
Yeah, how many people have seen that? I've seen it several times. It's
happened a lot. And, you know, good grief, our businesses can't afford that.
Nope.
That is the reversal of that. I realize there are some caveats with that. It has to be the third time, blah, blah, blah. But it's the right direction. It's putting the crime back in crime again. So that is happening. There's also an event if you live here in Reading. Can I look this up fast enough to actually make it make sense? I can. It's happening. Yes, on 36, there is a forum with former Sacramento County Sheriff John McGinnis. That will be North State Sheriffs and District Attorneys, Congressman Doug LaMalfa, Reading Mayor Tanessa Audette, and that'll be tomorrow, Monday, October 28th, 6 p.m. in the community room at the Reading City Hall on Cypress Avenue. So if you have any questions about that, look at ShastaGOP.com. It's right there on the front page for you. It's worth going, worth supporting, and worth learning about. And if you're not sure what Prop 36 is about, definitely show up and learn about that so you can vote for it and feel good about it. That is all. Back to our guest, Dr. Shizong Chen. I had 2 things I wanted to add from his bio. Starting in 2010, Dr. Chen has given presentations on the Renaissance of Chinese culture to over 100, and so I'm sure now there's more because this is kind of old, Rotary Clubs, Kiwanis Clubs, Lions Clubs, and various colleges. So he does a lot of public speaking and educating. And since 2012, he has been working with a group of activists in China to use China's current laws to defend civil rights that are in short supply in China. So it's not like he came here, did well, you know, smart guy, started a company, has a nice life, and said, see ya. He has continued to try to make a change, educate those of us here, and help the folks back home. So hats off to you, Dr. Chen.
Thank you.
I mean, that's not easy. A lot of people would just say, oh, I'm doing fine. I think I'll just, you know, stick to my own life and leave it alone.
No, it's not easy. It's very hard. But, you know, we have to do it.
Yeah. No, I think that's awesome and important. All right, so I kind of forget where we were, but you're really good at focusing, so you know where we were.
we were at introduction or introducing in the concept of generous barbarism,
mm-hmm.
how that works. And so, when we look at it again, it's really a bribery of the United States government.
Yeah.
To look away from the human rights abuses, right, the crimes at the world stage. It's a bribery. We'll give you money. You allow us to do what we want to do. Right. So, and how then, why is that bad? Why is that bad to the United States? How could that hurt us at all? Right? Job loss. Right away. In the China Shock 1, China Shock 1.0, if we call it the current, well, they actually are calling the high-end export by China Shock 2. In China Shock 1, the United States lost 2 million manufacturer jobs to China. How did that happen?
Wow.
Yeah. How did that happen? Because the U.S., well, not the U.S., because Wall Street sees the great opportunity to lower cost in China. So China's supposed to be, look at this way, CCP sells China as a, it's a huge market, right? That's what they originally said. You know, come on, there's a huge market here. So China's supposed to be a huge market for us to sell our stuff to. Instead, U.S. business then set up production in China to produce product there and then to export to the United States. The United States become China's market. What China became? China became a labor market. The labor is so cheap there. How can you... It's not just cheap, it's really slave. It's too big a topic here, but really it was a cheap slave labor in China.
Mm-hmm.
At one point there are 1.6 million labor camps in China. 1.6 million, and each of them have thousands of people, prisoners' conscience. Incarcerated there, forcing them to do forced labor. So how can you compete with that kind of force? Right? So China become a large labor market and then export their production back to the big market in the United States. Our industrialists, our entrepreneurs, our investment bankers are doing this to our fellow Americans. They move their factories to China. Of course,
yeah.
American laborers will lose their income. So, who benefited from it? Not the Chinese people.
And so, not to skip over that, for folks who don't follow the the, you know, things that go on in China. Why is it that the Chinese people aren't benefiting? If they're making more goods and services, because we Americanize everything in our viewpoint, obviously. So looking through our lens, if they're making more goods and services, that means they're working more hours, which means they're getting paid more and they're making more money. But how does that work in China? Or not work, I guess.
With American technology, cash flow, management, the Chinese Communist government began to so-called privatization. Right? There was a wave of privatization in former Soviet Union countries like Poland, one of the most successful programs in East Europe. But there are other countries. They're doing their privatization because those countries were previously owned by communist government. Right? But their privatization is more or less fair. That is, the citizens somehow has a fair chance of receiving a portion of what is owed to them. Right? Not in China. Between the after China was admitted into the WTO, there are a large wave of 440,000 national or the government owned entities were so called privatized, and that process was not fair at all. They just basically bankrupt the all this 40,000 industry, allowing the government official to loot them. Basically, you know, penny on a million, not even penny on a dollar.
Wow.
And then they throw. Listen to this. They throw 60 million. Factory workers, manufacturer workers, onto the street overnight. You're on your own. And that's why Chinese people do not benefit from that at all. All this, you know, used to be a public company, there that many people worked there,
mm-hmm.
were privatized to those officials, and then they then formed this joint venture with money from the United States, get technology, technology management, cash flow, and become their own company. And then they hire less number of people because U.S. technology is more efficient. They need to hire less people and make the same amount of product and sell to the United States. 60 million Chinese workers were overnight thrown on the street. These do not get talked about. So millions of families were immediately put into a poverty. And what can they do?
Yeah, no kidding.
20 million female workers were turned into prostitutes.
Wow.
That's how sad it was.
Wow.
We do not report that.
We don't report that. We gloss over all that and really make it look like they've, you know, it's crazy to me. But I think that because the abuses in China are not highlighted, it looks like China has a much more organized society and things are going really well over there and you don't ever hear anybody complain. And unfortunately, I think the part that people do probably know but don't consciously think about is that you don't hear any complaints because you're not allowed to complain. Complaining is not one of the choices there. What happens if you do complain?
Even, two things. What happens if you complain? First of all, you become one of the, what I mentioned earlier, the slave forces that produces a good product to export to the United States in labor camps. Number one. Number two, you'll be shunned by the media from the free world. Rupert Murdoch used to say this. He was leader. He was the leader of, you know, Western media corruption. He said this. We have to be respectful to our host country. They're trying to get into China. They're trying to get into the big market of China. So, you have to be respectful to your host.
Wow.
You have to respect what they want you to say and what you don't want you to say. He even married a woman sent by that regime. you know, that woman was a trained spy. Of course, later, Wendy Deng. Later, they divorced.
Wow. Now she's what? Let's see. Is she friends with Eric Swalwell?
Yeah.
Does she go by Fang Fang?
No, not that one. Not that one. No. Fang Fang is another one. There are millions like that.
I couldn't skip over Fang Fang. Diane Feinstein's gone, but she had a Chinese driver who turned out to be a spy. I mean, there's just like lots of stories about that.
Yeah. But anyway, there's no benefit from the general Chinese population. It benefit a few in the United States, and it benefit even fewer in China. That made them filthy rich.
Uh-huh.
So at the short end was the general public in the United States and the general public in China. Okay. That is number one. Right. So this is kind of American entrepreneurs did to the American labor force. Okay, that's the number one. Number two.
Okay, hold on for the second one. We'll take a really quick break, 5 seconds, right? And then we'll be right back. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Six gun in my hand. Behind a gun, I make my final stand. It's why they call me bad company, and I can't deny it.
What indeed? All right.
Number two.
Yeah. It felt like 3 seconds only.
It wasn't even the full five.
Number two, the American loss, the loss of American technologists and trade secrets. So, the Chinese Communist Party are not just satisfied to share their profit with the Wall Street, with American entrepreneurs, you know, American politicians, particularly American politicians, as they, you know, promised before, because they want, you know, everybody wants more money. Remember that you know, that many containers can be filled, right? not the bank accounts. It never can never be filled up. So they're the same. So why should we just, you know, sit back and let you to a iPhone, okay? Only an iPhone when a China factory produces an iPhone, it only gets like $20 out of, you know, the 1,000. There's a very low number, right? So because you're low end, because your labor is filling just a low end job. You're just exporting low end products. But why the Chinese officials, CCP officials, be satisfied with that? So they start all kinds of ways to get American technology to steal, rob, and use women anyway. So that was a problem, big problem, between the United States and China. Lots of American companies, they want to set up their factory in China because, you know, labor is cheap. Chinese government then forced them to share their patent, their secret. And when you have thousands and thousands and thousands of American businesses in China being forced to do that, that quickly helped the Chinese communist government to upgrade their industry production. And then they used their internet army to break into U.S. websites, you know, business website, Department of Defense website, Boeing websites, you know, Coca-Cola websites, and steal their technology. It is those kind of a technology that allow China to make the electric vehicles, to make the solar panels, to make the lithium batteries, all of that to now overtake American company to export. Right. For example, right, this is a true story. When the solar power technology was first came out to, you know, from research into industrial production, there was this U.S.-China, that's called the Sister City Program. There was also the state governor platform where it would bring the U.S. governors and city mayors to a meeting with their counterpart in China. And then one year in Seattle, I forgot the year, 2015? Yeah. There was one year that at Seattle with the World Expo there, China's President Xi Jinping came. And Xi Jinping promised to I forgot which state, but one of the governors there, and then said that, you know, we have, you know, this big market, you can come to work with us, and we'll produce the solar jointly. We'll produce the solar panel jointly. Yeah, sure enough, that state helped to arrange a meeting for the business to set up a factory in China. In less than 2 years, China's solar panel becomes number one.
What a shocker.
Seller, yeah.
Well, it's interesting because if I had to guess, I would say, and I know this is going to sound weird, but Wyoming. The governor in Wyoming is extremely friendly to the Chinese Communist Party for some inexplicable reason. Quite a bit of land, many large corporate deals going on in Wyoming. We had people come into the Republican headquarters here who were delegates to the National Republican Convention and was like, "Whoa, what are you guys doing here?" And they said, "Oh, driving by, saw the sign, came in," and I don't even know why we started talking about China, but they said, "You would not believe what's going on in Wyoming. It's a huge takeover of Chinese purchase of land and all these things," and you would think, I don't know, Wyoming would be maybe out of all 50 states, one of the last three, I would say, would go for that.
Mm-hmm. As a Wyoming-born citizen, I do not condone these acts.
The disclaimer. Yeah, no, they were really upset about it, and I was shocked. That was just a couple weeks ago. So, anyway, just my two bits. If I had to pick, I'd say maybe it's Wyoming. We can check and get back to people.
Yeah, this kind of story abound. And that is how Americans did this now, or American business did that to themselves, right? The first thing is what the American investors, entrepreneurs did to the American labor force. Now this is what they did back to themselves. They created this competitor. Well, it's not even competitors.
Right.
They created thieves, right? They created thieves that steal their technology and then become their worst enemy. So they created their own fate, so to speak. We'll come back to how they created their own. So this is the second way they hurt themselves, right? And again, this doesn't help China. Does not help Chinese people.
No, it's not benefiting the people who live there. And just before we leave that idea of the theft of technology and all of that. Back in, I was just looking at we have an archive page labeled China. It's pretty easy. It's right at the top of the page. And March 10th, 2019, we did a show based on a book called Hard Drive, A Family's Fight Against Three Countries with Mary Todd. She's the mother of Shane Truman Todd, who was murdered in Singapore. They claimed it was suicide. He was working for a company in China and basically realized that they were trying to...
That was Huawei, wasn't it?
I don't know exactly which company he was working for. We did another program on Huawei, but they wanted him to bring back technology on paper. The demand from the company was, we don't want anything to come back from your trip to America on any type of media device. We want it all on paper. And it was magnetics for cell phones. And he realized, hey, wait a second. This is because he was in a cell phone technology industry. And he realized, this isn't about cell phones. This has a military application. They're actually trying to get me to commit treason. And so he told his parents, he was like 30 years old, he wasn't a kid, and he said, I'm not going to do this anymore, I'm going to leave, and I'll be done in 2 weeks, blah, blah, blah. And then magically, he was a big, tall guy and was hanged from the doorknob of his bathroom, or the back door, or the back of the door of his bathroom, which is ridiculous. But there was a hard drive in his room that had everything on it. Gave that to the American government, who worked with the Chinese. It disappeared. Nothing ever got done.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of, just in case people think maybe you're making something out of things that are small. We've actually spoken to other people who have had this happen in their family. So.
Yeah. So. Then, at the same time, why China is able to rack up this kind of production in China? what is wrong? People may ask, so what is wrong? Number one, this technology is stolen, okay? That was wrong. But even if those technology were not stolen or somehow developed, well, what is wrong to upgrade your industrial production so you can outcompete your competitors, right? I mean, competition is the, well, as we were taught, is the driving force of business. Well, in most other countries, in every other country, with the increase of industrial production, with the increase of your creative value, because this is a higher value, right? This is no longer the low-end product. Usually, when you upgrade your industry production, when you start to create your higher value product, then the labor force will benefit. They will have higher income. Right. The income then would increase the domestic consumer demand, and then that will create, the wealth will create new jobs. It will be a positive feedback loop in other countries. And that is why so many countries, you know, after World War II, after Cold War, start to take off. Right, particularly in Asia, because this technology, this factory build up benefit that country. Yet China is on a vicious cycle. But particularly the automated process of production allow the government, remember I just mentioned it, the American technology come in, allow Chinese government to bankrupt 40,000 factories and put 60 million people on the street, right? Because that government can do that, okay? So with this, the high-end production would need less job because they're all on industry factory line. The low-end product, like clothes, shoes, even though their value is low, they don't make as much, make very little money when you export it. But they keep a large labor force. This high-end, particularly like computer, electronics, they're done by machine. So even though the export may be higher, the labor force demand is lower. So as China is making more of this high-end product, it needs less people to work.
Mm-hmm.
So there are more people laid off. And that causes a problem. The shrinking of domestic consumer demand. So in China, there's a deflation instead of inflation. And there's many countries, many governments, including the United States, trying to put pressure on China to increase domestic consumer demand. But that, to increase domestic consumer demand, would require those government officials who own those business to share their profit with the general public. That's not in their interest.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that's not on their list of priorities.
No.
Today or any other day. Quick break here and we'll come right back. Our guest is Dr. Shizhong Chen. Be back in 5 seconds. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Very dreamy.
Texas, back in 1835. They drew a line in the sand. The folks at Gonzales had freedom on their minds. It was all because of a cannon that had kept their colony safe. But then General Santa Anna sent some Mexican troops to take the big gun away. You know what those colonists said? Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but we'll warn you. You'll have to pry from our cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it. One shot at a time.
We have come far from that, very far.
Oh yeah,
from that. But that's part of our part of American history that many other countries have tried and failed, and we've managed to survive this long. But walking away from our history and how hard we fought to keep our freedom and doing this weird thing we're doing with China and other countries, allowing them to infiltrate our country and take things over and steal our technology and manipulate our markets, it's not going to come to a good end, actually.
No. And they've done it without firing a shot.
Which is what they said they would do.
Yep. Yep.
And this is what I try to, you know, expose here. And so we have like 15 minutes. But in a word, China may be the first country, or will be the first country, that needs more machine than human being, right? Because as long as those factories can crank up this high-end product, the more it can sell, the less they'll need the people. In other country, in any other country, this will create a social problem. It did create a social problem, like I mentioned, you know, 20 million women turned into prostitutes. But other government will feel the pressure from the society, not the Chinese Communist Party. It doesn't have to feel it, because it can. It just can control the society, can silence the society. So many governments try to tell the Chinese government, you need to build up your domestic consumer demand. Any government will say yes. Any government will have to surrender to that social problem and pressure, not China. So the Chinese Communist Party is unique in that way.
Yeah, they have a literal stranglehold on all of their citizenry.
Yeah. Because they can. Because they can do it. They're doing it. All right. So, now this brings to the... I think this is going to bring to a pretty quick ending of this. Because now the world feels the pressure from this overcapacity. They all start to use tariff. I think just very recently, 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Indonesia, that little country, in Chinese Communist Party size, that little country, slapped 200% tariff on mighty China.
No.
Now, more and more countries are going to use tariff. You can produce cheap their labor. You can produce your product as cheap as you want. But we will use tariff. So this is a defeat for the communist scheme. And I don't think the communists will have a way out on this one. Because It has pushed things to the far extreme, to the point where other countries have to defend. In the same sense, like I mentioned earlier, other barbarisms use military to threaten other countries, you know, livelihood, and they force other countries to fight back, and they fail. The aggressor will fail. In this case, CCP, I think, will eventually fail because it has pushed things to the extreme. Once it gets pushed to the extreme, you'll fail. So, here comes the most important question. So, what is so bad about this?
It all sounds bad to me.
What?
It all sounds bad to me.
Right. But so, many people still say, well, we make money, and the CP is going to fail, so what is so bad about me? Okay? If we view, here's a something that maybe shocking to people. Okay? If you think you just live one life, that may be the answer. Nothing bad. What if you let your life goes on? What if you will reincarnate? What if?
Oops. That'd be a bad calculation.
What if you have done so many bad things to the Chinese people? Next life, you will be reincarnated into a suffering Chinese.
That's another good reason to ban religion in China. You wouldn't want people thinking about that.
My goodness. Ryan, you read my mind.
It's like that's like a terrible that's like a terrible advertisement.
No, this is exactly why this regime, the ultimate harm of the Chinese communist regime is its persecution of religion in China. And it enlists the help from other governments in its persecution of religion. It's abuse of human rights, and it, the extreme of the human rights abuse is applied to, you know, people who believe in, you know, Falun Gong, Christian, you know, Buddhism, all that. So China persecutes believers the worst. And this is a regime who persecute all religion.
Yeah, and, I mean, you couldn't have people believing in either reincarnation or, I mean, I guess they're both afterlife, but heaven, hell, reincarnation, anything that has consequences and morality.
And maintain control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not maintain control that way. I mean,
right.
Persecuting people and subjugating them, that's not really all that compatible. Is there any, like I know in Iran there's a very, very heavy resistance. I was speaking with someone on Friday night, actually, who's part of that process. We'll have him on again here pretty quick. But is there a, I don't even know how to, I know there's a resistance movement, but how is it in China? I mean, how are people able to fight back at all? And if so, are they doing well?
The only, as far as I know, the only group that has persisted is Falun Gong.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they are fighting back is by what they say, clarifying the facts, letting the people know what this government is about and how they persecute Falun Gong, how they used the organ harvesting in Falun Gong practitioner, and now how the organ harvesting has extended, and spill over to all groups of people, even people who are non-religious. In China, your original sin is when your body type happened to fit another needy person, so your organ will not be rejected by him, then you have committed the original sin. You will be condemned to death. Your organ will be taken because your organ will survive a needy a Chinese government official or someone who can pay for it.
Wow.
Well, and in our shows that we did with Mitchell Nicholas Gerber on this particular topic, he had said, I don't know, maybe somebody else, but he had said there were like 200,000 forced organ harvests, transplants in China per year.
It's 200, if not more.
Yeah, if not
more.
Because at first, when we first heard about it, we thought, okay, you're taking a kidney and the person still goes home. But no, you're talking about your heart, your lungs, you're dead. I mean, they kill people and steal their organs and sell them to other people, just to be blunt about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of bizarre. Yeah. The only form of capitalism they seem to practice in China is stealing your organs and selling them on the open market.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of countries don't really condemn it. I mean, they're...
Well, they don't talk about it.
They don't talk about
it. Which is not condemning it.
Well, they do. There was it Indonesia? There was recently a president from a country visit China and thanked publicly on media, thanked the Chinese government helping him to get a liver transplantation.
Oh, gosh.
Wow. Well, and we had asked a long time ago when we first learned about this. It's been years ago now, and when I first heard the number, I'm like, wait, 200,000 organ transplants a year? I'm thinking they've got to be kind of good at this. I wasn't really thinking about it, and they said, no, actually, they're not great at it because it doesn't matter. If they botch the transplant, they just go find somebody else, kill them, and steal their liver, heart, or whatever they want.
It comes with a warranty.
Yeah, on the spot.
Wow.
If that isn't a country to be, I don't know, I'm not real big on pushing fear, but if people aren't pushing back on that country, if they're thinking we're just like them, only we were bigger clothes. I don't know. It's just crazy to think that we have a whole lot of similarity in the structure of our country, not the people. I'm not saying the people are doing this, but their government. If we're not properly concerned about the influence of their government in our country, I'm not really sure I have a word for that.
Yeah, we only have time to talk to this point. I hope that we'll have another program to talk about why religion freedom is not just important for China, it's important for the world. You know, Martin Luther King used to say, "Injustice somewhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Well, in this case, evil in China is a threat to kindness, to humanity everywhere. I hope we will have time to discuss that. But here, I just want to ask, for all who didn't think it's a big deal, who do not see the problem with sharing, with, you know, getting cheap product from China, my question is, what if you will be reincarnated into a Chinese in your next life. Think about that.
Yeah.
I think that's important.
I think it is important. And besides that, regardless of what you believe, reincarnation or heaven and hell or whatever, unless you just believe nothing happens, the ramification is obviously there. It has to be very sobering for everyone, and especially as we're looking at who we elect and who they support and want to work with, and as a country, what do we support and want to emulate and, I don't know, support and do business with. It's imperative that we take a look at that. I think people get really hung up on the personalities of people that are running, but you also have to realize it's a policy. We got a policy issue hanging over our heads. Dr. Chen, we have hit the last 5 seconds.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming on with us. We always appreciate it.
Yes.
And I hope people will go to the China tab on the website and get educated. It's time to smarten up our fellow citizens here.
Yeah, because it's coming at us.
China.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
You know there ain't no rest for the wicked. Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay, we got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down, we can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.